And welcome back to the second half of Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis, and there's more important information coming up, so please keep that pencil and paper handy. We're going to get right into our commentary for this week. This is written by Don Thompson, the Associated Press writer from Arnold, California. And we talked about Arnold, California just a minute ago. That's where Sierra Pacific Industries is doing 900 acres of clear cutting, and there have been numerous arrests. Anyway, here is Don Thompson's commentary on Earth First Radio. This community has grown up around logging for 60 years. Its history so entwined with timber that it is building a logging museum. A sign at the edge of town even bills Arnold as the gateway to the big trees, a reference to nearby Calaveras Big Tree State Park, home of the giant sequoias. But residents are turning on the industry that helped to define them. They fear clear-cutting by Sierra Pacific Industries will damage their new livelihood, tourism. People come here for the trees, says businesswoman Erin Ross, a fifth-generation resident. If they're not finding trees, if they're finding big open areas, they're going to go somewhere else. Former loggers have joined self-described tree huggers, retirees, and second homeowners in Calaveras County to oppose the large-scale logging of 884 nearby acres. It's never been done that way, says Pat Bradley, granddaughter of Frank Blagan, who built the local sawmill in 1938. It's always been selective logging. Selective logging is where you go in and log, but at least you leave a forest behind you. Opponents say they don't oppose selective logging or the contract loggers doing the clear-cutting. After all, logging has provided jobs in the Sierra for more than a century. They say their fear is that clear-cutting, which temporarily removes virtually every tree over 20-acre patches, will hurt the area's scenery, wildlife, and possibly its drinking water. But the company and state officials say the water supply is safe. Anti-clear-cutting pamphlets have appeared on cars, petitions are being circulated, community meetings are being held, and dozens of residents recently lined the highway through Arnold with protest signs. Sierra Pacific says its methods will eventually produce a healthier, more productive forest. It plans to clear-cut much of its 1.5 million acres in California, including 75,000 acres in Calaveras County over the next 100 years. The goal is to create tree plantations, which the company say will raise per-acre production by precisely spacing the trees, using healthier genetically selected trees, and applying herbicides to thin competition that might stunt the sapling's growth, in short, making timber production more like a garden and less like a forest. Many people are reacting to short-term visual concerns, and the forest is a long-term investment, plain and simple, says Sierra Pacific forester Dave Baker. What once was a blue-collar area that revolved around local sawmill has changed dramatically over the past decade as retirees, vacation home owners, and more recently telecommuters have flocked to this community north of Yosemite National Park. Tourists now double or triple the 3,500-person population on weekends, often stopping at the art galleries, gift shops, and cafes. Tourism now accounts for a third of the area's economy, the Sierra Business Council says. Opponents say they will take their concerns to Governor Gray Davis after they failed last week to convince the Calaveras County Water District to block the clear-cutting. County supervisors recently warned that the ramifications to the community are tremendous. This issue has cut across all political and philosophical spectrums. In Calaveras County, virtually no one objected during the comment period, which opponents say shows the public notice requirements were inadequate. We're not the Old West anymore, said County Supervisor Marita Calloway. Everyone wants a say in what their neighborhood looks like. Sierra Pacific said clear cuts can minimize the impact on the surrounding forest. Rather than selectively cutting trees throughout 200 acres, the same amount of timber can be had by clear cutting 20 acres. And once logged, the land remains untouched for about 60 years. Such arguments fail to satisfy opponents like the more than 100 area residents in the recent Water District hearing who criticized the plan, much of which would clear-cut along Highway 4 over Ebbets Pass. What's going to happen to Calaveras County and Ebbets Pass if this is allowed to happen? Bertha Underhill asked the board. This is just so beautiful. Please don't let this happen to us. And that's the today's commentary on Earth First Radio. Let's get back into animal news here. From Netherlands, we read that the KLM airline is accused of killing squirrels. Public prosecutors are taking KLM Royal Dutch Airlines to court for grinding up 440 live Chinese squirrels in an industrial meat processing machine, officials said Monday. The airline and two of its employees will face unspecified charges for mistreating the animals, said Tyne Zwers of the Harlem Public Prosecutor's Office. KLM decided to slaughter the rodents, which are similar to North American ground squirrels, after they arrived at the Schiphol Airport from China in April of 1999 without import documents or proper cages. Those who were involved in the abuse will have to appear in court, Zwers said. The squirrels arrived in Amsterdam en route to a collector in Athens, Greece. Once discovered, KLM said it had little choice but to destroy the animals, but the manner of their disposal shocked the nation and prompted a debate in Parliament. KLM apologized for the death of the squirrels and said it deserved criticism. Zwers said the case would come before a Harlem judge once prosecutors had interviewed all the witnesses. It will take the court a few weeks to fix an appearance date, she said. KLM official Hugo Boss said he couldn't discuss the case in detail. If it's necessary to follow up on the tragic incident, we will leave it up to the judge to rule, he said. KLM has stopped all exotic cargo shipments and closed its animal hotel, which cared for illegally imported animals before they could be returned to their home countries. The Dutch Society for the Protection of Animals said it supported the decision to prosecute. They really crossed the line, said Representative Niels Dorland. This shows how poorly animals are treated by the airlines. And I think getting ground up in a sausage machine is just about as poorly as you can be treated anywhere. And listing the sage grouse would save the West from itself. There has been much reporting and opining about efforts to protect the sage grouse. Most articles and editorials have focused on how listing sage grouse under the Endangered Species Act might affect Western land use and economics. However, of greater concern is the condition of the sagebrush habitat where sage grouse and increasing numbers of Westerners live and work. The fragile sagebrush steppes, or sagebrush grassland, sagebrush country as it's variously called, has been maligned, mistreated, and ignored by resource users, land managers, and decision makers for two centuries. The sage grouse is the proverbial canary in the coal mine. Where the grouse struggles to survive, the landscape has suffered serious degradation. Listing the sage grouse as a threatened or endangered species may be the necessary first step to reverse their decline and restore the ecosystem. Sagebrush habitat has been fragmented, damaged, and destroyed by livestock grazing, agricultural conversion, suburbanization, and ex-urbanization, mining, herbicides, pesticides, skewed fire regimes, invasive species, coal bed methane development, off-road vehicles, utility corridors, roads, and, of course, the all-present fence. The Bureau of Land Management estimates that 220 million acres of pristine sagebrush country have been reduced to 150 million acres of mostly degraded habitat across the West. Although the sagebrush country may seem less scenic than mountains, forests, and rivers, it is of equal importance for fish, wildlife, and humanity. Where functional, sagebrush ecosystems protect water quality, prevent soil erosion, and provide habitat for hundreds of sensitive plants and animals. As many as 2 million sage grouse lived in the West when Lewis and Clark first saw them in 1806, and huge flocks were still reported to darken the sky nearly a century later. The historic range of the sage grouse closely conformed to the distribution of sagebrush habitat covering what became 16 western states and 3 Canadian provinces. Since 1900, however, sage grouse distribution has been reduced. The grouse no longer occurs in Arizona, British Columbia, Kansas, Nebraska, New Mexico, or Oklahoma. The total sage grouse population is currently estimated at 140,000 individuals in the 11 states. Since our nation lacks an Ecosystem Protection Act, conservationists must address the symptoms of degraded ecosystems through the Endangered Species Act. While sage grouse are considered a good candidate for protection, federal biologists have admitted that any number of other sagebrush obligate species, that means animals that have to live in sagebrush, could also be successfully petitioned for listing. Conservationists have already petitioned to list the sage grouse in Washington and the Gunnison sage grouse, a newly designated species that occurs primarily in southwestern Colorado. The prospect of protecting the sage-grouse under the Endangered Species Act has prompted a flurry of local and regional meetings to craft management plans and memoranda of understandings between state and federal management agencies in an attempt to avoid listing. Whether these instruments will result in real protection for the sage-grouse is yet to be seen. Clearly, these agencies and Western resource users fear the impact of the spotted owl of the West. The mere threat of listing the sage-grouse has already yielded positive results for the sage-grouse and their habitat. Protecting sage-grouse is one purpose of the multi-million-dollar Great Basin Restoration Initiative unveiled by the Bureau of Land Management to restore millions of acres charred by wildfire and choked by weeds in Nevada. In Wyoming, the effect of coal bed methane development projects on sage-grouse habitat is being scrutinized by the BLM, the industry, ranchers, and conservationists. The BLM national budget for 2001 includes millions of dollars to inventory sage-grouse in several western states. Sage-grouse are now being considered in local grazing management plans and proposals to protect huge tracts of public land as national monuments or conservation areas. The sage-grouse has become an important symbol of the new sagebrush movement in the American West. This time it is not a rebellion but a revolution in sagebrush patriots seeking to protect and restore watersheds, habitat, and wildlife for future generations. Of sagebrush, I hope. Westerners who live and work in sagebrush country should rally to support stronger protections for sage-grouse as their destiny will be our own. If you'd like more information about the American Lands Sage-Grouse Conservation Project and how you can help, please contact Mark Salvo. Send email to mark@sagegrouse.org. That's mark@sagegrouse.org, or call him at 503-978-1054. That's Mark. His number, 503-978-1054. And in an article entitled "Environmentalists Denounce Snow Job," written by Jason Blevins of the Denver Post, here goes. It's a small green book printed on recycled paper. On that much, all sides can agree, but that's where agreement ends, at least in Colorado. National and local ski industry pundits are hailing Sustainable Slopes, a green constitution released in Washington by the National Ski Areas Association, calling it a collective step toward environmental stewardship. The book elaborately details a host of environmental principles ski areas can use to improve the industry's tarnished environmental track record. It is the culmination of 2 years' work with ski areas and national environmental groups. Quote, "We saw the need to make a commitment in writing about our environmental stewardship values. We realize how important the environment is to our customers," said Geraldine Hughes, a public policy director for the National Ski Areas Association. But Colorado environmentalists, those nasty, dastardly environmentalists, those on the front line in the state with the most ski areas and those who chained themselves to backhoes in a failed attempt to stop Vail's recent expansion efforts are calling Sustainable Slopes a pure snow job. Jeff Berman, president of Colorado Wild, called the environmental charter a PR greenwash. Berman's Boulder-based Colorado Wild is the proverbial thorn in the side of every Colorado ski area seeking to expand, and the group is behind a lawsuit targeting Arapahoe Basin's effort to make snow with Snake River water. "This is going to be used to change the ski resort's image undeservedly," said Berman, noting that after Colorado Wild's work with the National Ski Area Association, the U.S. Forest Service, and the ski industry in creating the principles, it actually incorporates none, not one, of our suggestions. It's a pure snow job. "The principles are noble, the efforts admirable, but they, quote, do not address the single most contentious environmental problematic issue of ski areas," Berman says. It does absolutely nothing to dissuade ski areas from expanding," he said, pointing to the charter's inability to block the recent expansion at Vail, Keystone, Telluride, or Breckenridge. "It doesn't do anything. It's just a piece of paper." And six environmental groups have asked a federal court to dismiss a suit against them by an organization of six Western power companies, arguing it is an attempt to censor public discussion on global warming. The lawsuit alleged that the groups engaged in, quote, "aggressive commercial ventures that falsely represented the effects of carbon dioxide emissions from the burning of fossil fuel, especially from coal." This strategic lawsuit against public participation, known as a slap suit, seeks to restrict the group's First Amendment right to alert the public to the potential impacts of global warming, the environmental group said. Slap suits are defamation or other tort suits against individuals or groups who first sued or petitioned against the company or government. The motion to dismiss was filed by the environmental groups Turning Point Project, Friends of the Earth, Earth Island Institute, Ozone Action, Rainforest Action Network, and the International Center for Technology Assessment. The suit stems from a series of advertisements that, quote, highlighted the causes, potential impacts, and possible solutions to global warming, the environmental group statement said. The lawsuit seeks an injunction precluding continuation of such advertisements in print, on the Internet, and other channels of interstate advertising because they advocate, quote, an immediate shift away from the use of all fossil fuel to what the defendants characterize as renewable energy sources and the elimination of the production of electricity from coal-fired power plants by the year 2050. The false and misleading statements in the advertisements cast an unwholesome and unfavorable light on the plaintiff's product, thereby promoting a competing product, renewable energy sources for electric generations, according to the plaintiffs. The Turning Point Project and the other organization's main avenues of attack in their advertisement is the use of apocalyptic predictions concerning future climate that have no scientific support, the April 17th statement by the association said. Brent Blackwelder, executive director of Friends of the Earth, said the suit is, quote, a desperate attempt by an industry absolutely unwilling to face reality. It has lost the scientific debate, it is losing the public debate, and it is now looking to the courts to stop the debate as a last resort to maintain its dirty profits, unquote. And Fred Palmer, the Western Fuels Association general manager and chief executive officer, said, quote, they are attempting to portray electric generation from fossil fuels as a significant health risk, while in fact the opposite is true. According to Palmer, the outcome of its complaint could have extraordinary ramifications in the international and national policy debate on fossil fuels and global warming. The environmental group's motion asked the U.S. District Court for the District of Wyoming to dismiss the case because none of the defendants named are based in Wyoming. Defending the case in Wyoming would represent a significant inconvenience and financial burden, they said. Since the plaintiff failed to show why the case should be brought in Wyoming, the case should be dismissed, the defendants asserted in their motion. Randy Hayes, president of the Rainforest Action Network, said the industry group's move to file suit in Wyoming is a thinly veiled attempt to find the most inconvenient forum possible for the defendants to hold a trial on global warming. And this article was written by Pamela Nager. And President Clinton has announced a new executive order that directs the Environmental Protection Agency to better protect beaches, coasts, and ocean waters from pollution by developing Clean Water Act regulations that strengthen water quality protection for coastal and ocean waters. In developing these regulations, EPA may set higher levels of protection in especially valued or vulnerable areas. In addition, the executive order strengthens and expands the system of marine protected areas. President Clinton also directed the Secretary of Commerce and the Secretary of the Interior to develop a plan to permanently protect the coral reefs of Northwest Hawaiian Islands, which represent nearly 70% of the coral reefs in U.S. waters. If you'd like more information, you can visit the EPA website. That's at www.epa.gov/OWOW/oceans/protecting_oceans/. And I'll read that webpage again. www.epa.gov/OWOW/oceans/protecting_oceans/. I hope you got all that. And a June 7th request to Michigan's Natural Resources Commission asking them to make the Department of Natural Resources put an emergency hold on cutting 78,417 acres of the oldest stands on Michigan state forests has gotten a response. According to Ann Wawode of Michigan's Sierra Club, they and the Mackinac Forest Council are asking that the cut be stopped until four conditions were met. The Department of Natural Resources completes the designation of an old-growth system in accordance with a 1994 policy requirement. Number two, that staff be directed to identify an additional 5% of state lands to be put on hold. Number three, the public be allowed to participate in the Michigan Department of Natural Resources old growth designation process. And four, the agency provides information requested by environmental groups concerning the consideration process. Commissioner Jerry Bartnick, who visited one old growth stand slated for cutting, quote, clearly understood the urgency of the issues raised. He is also said to have learned a lot more about what old growth really is. It's not just the trees from that trip. And about not having been aware of that such stands still existed on state forest lands. On June 8th, the National Resources Commission of Michigan directed the Department of Natural Resources staff to meet with the two groups and put together a response on the issue to be discussed at the Natural Resources Commission July meeting. If you'd like more information, contact the Michigan Natural Resources Commission, P.O. Box 30028, Lansing, Michigan, 48909. Once again, that address, Natural Resources Commission, P.O. Box 30028, Lansing, Michigan, 48909. Or you can give them a call at 517-373-2352. That's 517-373-2352. And thank them for their reprieve in cutting old growth and urge them to remain strong on the issue. If you'd like more information, you can contact Ann Wowode at nne.wowode@sfsierra.sierraclub.org. That email address is nne.wowode@sfsierra.sierraclub.org. And 8 people have been hospitalized, including a woman in critical condition following a mercury spill near the Minera Yanacocha mine, 600 kilometers north of Lima, Peru. Approximately 3 gallons, that's 330 pounds of mercury, spilled from a contractor's truck in Choropama, 53 miles southwest of the mine, which is owned by the Newmont Mining Corporation and Compañía de Minas Buenaventura. The truck was en route from the mine in the northern Peruvian Andes Mountains to Peru's capital of Lima on June 2nd. Mine officials were notified the following morning by the Peruvian contractor Ransa, which began cleanup efforts and notified local people of the potential hazard. The Ministry of Health brought in staff to diagnose and treat anyone with symptoms of mercury poisoning. Choropampa is home to 3,500 people. To date, half a gallon of the mercury has been recovered. And if Uncle Dennis does his math, that means that 2.5 gallons are still out there. It is believed most of the remaining mercury may be in the possession of the local people who have traditionally used it for medicinal purposes. Collection efforts are being coordinated by local authorities. To date, 46 people in the area have notified the local clinic of symptoms of mercury poisoning. All have been administered blood tests. 8 people were evacuated to a hospital in nearby Cajamarca. Blood tests on the 8 people hospitalized indicated some had elevated levels of mercury in their blood. 7 of the 8 people in the hospital are reported to be recovering, but the 8th, a 38-year-old woman, developed pneumonia after admission to the hospital and remains in critical condition. Minera Yanacocha has flown a critical care specialist from Lima to attend her, and Newmont Mining is coordinating with the specialist to bring in special medicine for treatment of mercury poisoning, as well as further experts in mercury toxicology. Minera Yanacocha, the transport company, and local authorities are investigating the incident to determine the cause of the spill, while shipments of mercury from the mine have been halted. Mercury is a byproduct of gold production and is collected in its elemental form in the refinery. And unfortunately, that's about all the time we have for news on Earth First Radio. To get news or announcements from your bioregion to Earth First Radio, send us email at cruzef@cruzio.com. That's cruzef@cruzio.com. Or you can send letters to Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Once again, that's Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. And please be sure to send those announcements at least 3 weeks in advance. Nothing pisses off Uncle Dennis more than getting an announcement for an event that is happening tomorrow. And you can listen, if you want more in-depth news and information about the Earth First movement, please subscribe to the Earth First Journal. Their address is P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. Once again, that's the Earth First Journal, P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. And you can listen to Earth First Radio on your computer on the World Wide Web live Thursday nights at 8 o'clock. Go to www.microradio.net/FRSC. That's www.microradio.net/FRSC. And you'll find our streaming audio presentation there. Or if you miss that and you want to listen at any time, go to the World Wide Web site, www.radioforall.net. That's www.radio4all.net. .NET. You'll need a sound card in your computer for any of this stuff, but the software you need to play the MP3 files is free on the website. Earth First Radio is carried on a growing number of free speech and non-commercial radio stations. Be sure to ask your local station to rebroadcast Earth First Radio. Earth First Radio is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, and our theme music was written and performed by Daryl Cherney from the CD Keep It Wild. I'm Uncle Dennis. Thanks for tuning in. Now we're going to listen to some music on our way out. This is the Tinklers.
Well, I'm not a voice hearing freak, but as I was sitting here last week, listening to my rocking chair squeak, it seemed like it was trying to speak. It said trees like to ride in the forest and rest among the fungus and the leaves. Their trunks growing softer and porous, shaded by the younger towering trees. Well, I like to carve stuff from wood, and I think furniture's really good. But maybe as friends of the woods, we don't do exactly what we should. 'Cause trees like to rot in the forest, and little animals can have a home. Their trunks growing softer and porous, mingling the xylem with the phloem. I'm a voice hearing freak, 'cause lately I've been hearing stuff speak. The toad and the salamander meek, the tadpole and the carp in the creek. They say people like to ride in the ground, near to where their families can be found, happy to be finished.